But that's all from a powerful earthquake that rocked Turkey and Syria. Rises to more than 1,900. Search and rescue operations going on for many trapped under the rubble. Israeli forces killed several Palestinians in yet another raid on a refugee camp near the occupied West Bank city of Jericho area. And tens of thousands of British nurses and ambulance workers walking out over pay in the UK's largest ever strike by health workers. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. The death toll from a 7.8 magnitude quake that hit southern Turkey and northern Syria has risen to more than 1,900. Officials in Turkey have confirmed some 1,100 deaths and thousands of injuries. The Turkish Disaster Management Agency has called for international support as search and rescue operations continue for many still trapped under the rubble. The death toll is likely to rise substantially in the coming hours as the earthquake hit when many people were sleeping. Meantime, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has described the earthquake as the biggest disaster for his country in more than a century.
We were shaken by the biggest disaster in the last century after the 1939 Erzincan earthquake. We have prioritized search and rescue operations. 9,000 personnel are currently involved in search and rescue operations. This number is constantly increasing with those who reach the earthquake zone from outside.
Now, south across the border in Syria, the quake killed nearly 800 people. More than 1,000 others were also injured. Search operations are being hampered by tough weather conditions. The United States Geological Survey says that the epicenter was the Turkish city of Gaziantep. But tremors were felt as far away as in Egypt, Romania, and Georgia. Okay, from Damascus, I'm joined by Vanessa Abili, writer and activist. Could you have with us? So let's talk about Syrian side of the story. Turkey is also hit now. We're focusing on Syria, almost 800 people, and unfortunately, the death toll is expected to rise. And also, this is inclement weather conditions. And let's consider the timing of this. I mean, couldn't it happen at a worse time than this? Because Syria is already grappling with a host of other issues. There are times we have this, the raids by Israeli fighter jets. We have still remnants of ISIS terrorists and others threatening the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for one thing, of course, the United States and its proxy Kurdish separatist forces are occupying Syrian resources in the northeast, which includes their oil and wheat and barley, which means, of course, that the bulk of Syria is reliant upon Iranian oil to keep any kind of electricity running. At the moment, we have basically about 2 or 3 hours of electricity per day. There is no heating in the majority of homes across Syria. And, of course, we happen to have just gone through the real cold spell. Today, for example, there were driving rains and winds, high winds, which is hampering the rescue operation, but also means that the people who are now homeless are in the streets soaking wet and freezing cold without any alternative shelter and without any electricity, without any heating, without any fuel, because, of course, we don't have any heating fuel either in the country, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So these shortages, combined, of course, with the Western barbaric sanctions, including the Caesar law that was imposed by the Trump administration, which penalizes any country that even comes to the assistance of Syria. So those countries that can then be sanctioned by default if they come to the aid of Syria, which is, you know, a criminal sanctions regime to impose on any country and quite unprecedented. So with all of these elements, Syria is suffering. I mean, this is devastating for Syria. The areas of Aleppo, Hama, Idlib, Latakia, the coastal areas have been hit the hardest because they were closest to the epicenter in Turkey. Mm-hmm. In Aleppo, I think it's something like 89 buildings have collapsed. And we also have to remember that during the war, the terrorists, backed by the West, of course, had dug vast cities of tunnels underneath the residential areas of these cities. So the foundations were already made fragile by the war itself, and then, of course, by the war itself, the bombing, the aggression from the terrorist groups, and the liberation campaigns. So, you know, all of these buildings were structurally unsound anyway, and then introduced the earthquake, and of course you have absolute devastation.
Exactly. And Vanessa, you rightly mentioned the sanctions by the West. I mean, isn't it the time now to at least show some philanthropic and humanitarian gesture, at least on the surface, superficially, and to come up with some contribution and aid and at least lift sanctions for a while, reach out to the Syrian people, those who are hit by the disaster, and then think of punishing the Syrians in the form of sanctions in other ways?
Oh, of course, what is the West doing? The West is now, of course, promoting its assets in northwest Syria, the White Helmets in Idlib. It's claiming that it's going to be providing humanitarian aid, but that humanitarian aid will only go to the terrorist al-Qaeda-controlled area in the northwest of Syria. It won't come to the majority of Syria that is back under the protection of the Syrian government. The only help that the Syrian government will receive are from countries, allies like Iran, Russia, Lebanon, but of course Lebanon has also been affected both by the original two earthquakes and by the aftershocks, which have ensured that the damage continues. So really, Syria is very limited in who is going to come to its aid. There are local initiatives already being established to at least offer some kind of alternative housing for those that have been, the thousands that have now been displaced again, because we have to remember they were displaced by the terrorist groups that took over areas of these cities and basically occupied the houses of the people who have now returned to what are effectively damaged houses that are now completely collapsed after the earthquake. So these people will have been displaced three or four times in the last 10 years, and now they're running out of options. And yes, you know, this is a time that one would expect, if the West were really extolling their humanitarian values, that they weaponize against target nations, like even for Iran. We've seen the recent women's rights explosion in Western UN agencies, NGOs, and government-affiliated agencies. But when it comes down to actually helping the real Syrian people, they won't do it. They will only help their assets, who are controlling the Syrian assets in the northwest and the northeast.
That's right, unfortunately. Okay, thank you so much for that, Vanessa Bili, writer and activist in Damascus. Now, staying with that story, international offers to help Turkey and Syria with rescue efforts are pouring in the wake of the deadly quake. Iranian President Raisi has offered condolences to the bereaved families, saying that his country is ready to provide immediate relief aid to the two countries. The Russian government has also sent its condolences, expressing readiness to help the affected nations overcome the impacts of the natural disaster. Similar offers have been made by China, India, Britain, and France, among others. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan saying that 45 countries have offered help with search and rescue efforts. The EU says that more than 10 search and rescue teams from member states have been mobilized. The World Health Organization says it's activated its network of emergency medical teams. They will deliver essential care to the injured and the most vulnerable victims. Now, in other news, Israeli forces have killed 7 members of the Hamas resistance movement in a raid on a refugee camp in the city of Jericho or Ariha in the occupied West Bank. Regime forces arrested a Hamas commander during the incursion and took away the bodies of the dead. The refugee camp was under military siege for the past 9 days. The Israeli military conducted several raids, claiming they were after alleged perpetrators of a shooting at a restaurant. Now, that triggered clashes with Palestinians, who shot down an Israeli drone on Monday. Hamas and the Islamic Jihad resistance movements have condemned the raids. They say that such atrocities will not frighten Palestinians and force them to abandon their cause. The Israeli military has killed at least 43 Palestinians during raids in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Iran says a visit to Tehran by the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency is possible in the near future, provided technical preparations are in place. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that Iran has been in touch with the agency and dialogue between the two sides will go on in the future. The IAEA chief said last month that he might visit Iran in February in an attempt to restore cooperation with the country. The Iran official also spoke about a talks for the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal. Kanani said the parties are exchanging messages through different channels. He said that Iran has always welcomed efforts to facilitate the process and has shown its goodwill throughout the negotiations. The talks have been stalled for months. Iran says the pause is due to Washington's procrastination and refusal to provide guarantees. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahi has wrapped up his week-long visit to Latin American countries. During those meetings, the top diplomat discussed ways to enhance Tehran's cooperation with countries such as Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian is on the final leg of his trip to Latin America, where he has met with a number of high-ranking officials in an effort to boost bilateral and multilateral relations. Cuba was the latest destination of Amir Abdullahian, where he met with Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel. During a meeting, they discussed matters of mutual interest at bilateral and international levels. The top Iranian diplomat voiced his country's categorical support for Havana while condemning sanctions on Cuba and foreign intervention in its internal affairs. Díaz-Canel, for his part, said despite all the existing pressures, Cuba is determined to cooperate with friendly countries and work with them to eliminate obstacles and challenges lying ahead. The Cuban president criticized U.S. unilateralism and said that his country has earned political independence at a high price and would preserve it. Amir Abdullahian also met with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla. Both diplomats wrapped the U.S. sanctions policy against others, including Iran and several South American countries, saying such a policy is doomed to fail. Before Cuba, the top Iranian diplomat paid a visit to Venezuela, which is maintaining strong bilateral relations with Tehran. During a meeting between Amir Abdullahian and Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the two sides discussed ways to strengthen cooperation further in various fields, including energy. They also called for heightened vigilance in the face of U.S.-led pressure and bullying. Maduro also pointed to common challenges being faced by Venezuela and Iran. Amir Abdullahian also traveled to Nicaragua as part of his Latin American trip. In a meeting with President Daniel Ortega, he condemned unlawful sanctions imposed by the U.S. and certain Western countries on Iranian individuals and entities. He stressed, however, that the Islamic Republic has managed to move forward despite the coercive measures designed to stop the country's progress. Amir Abdullahian voiced Tehran's eagerness for closer cooperation in various fields, saying Iran sets no limits to the promotion of cooperation with Nicaragua. Ortega, for his part, highlighted shared concerns of Tehran and Managua. He said that the two countries have a common enemy, adding that what Iran fought and defeated in 1979 was the same Nicaraguans rose up against in the same year.
Now, Latin American visit by Iran's foreign minister highlights the need for countries like Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, and even Brazil to form an alliance to stand against U.S. hegemony and unilateralism. Latin American states are not the only ones, but even many African nations are eager to enhance ties with the East, that is Iran, Russia, and China.
Amir Abdullahian's visit to Latin America puts under the spotlight the significance of his meeting with officials there. One of the most important points highlighted by almost all leaders was that the ongoing developments in Latin America and elsewhere in the world are creating new opportunities for multilateralism. That was particularly underlined by the top Iranian diplomat, who dismissed unilateralism as an obsolete doctrine on the global stage. He stressed that unilateralism cannot respond to developments and changes taking place worldwide. In the case of Iran and Venezuela, the officials of the two OPEC members found a common ground to solidify their relations to deal with a common enemy, the United States, which has come up with crippling sanctions against them for years. Standing against the U.S. and Western imperialism was another topic of discussion during the Iranian official's visit. That was underscored in Daniel Ortega's comments, where he said the enemies of global peace and tranquility have maintained their imperialistic policies and considered the whole world, not just Latin America, as their backyard. Ortega, however, expressed hope that imperialism cannot last any longer. On sanctions, Latin American leaders echoed the stance of the Iranian foreign minister, who called such measures a terrorist threat being used by imperial powers as leverage. They stressed the need for boosting cooperation in trade and technology, among other things, to overcome those curbs. It seems that shared challenges have brought these countries together to push against U.S. hegemony. And what could make a difference? Moving away from the U.S. dollar, establishing a common currency, enhancing bilateral and multilateral trade. It seems that an oriental shift is largely taking place in today's world. That is visible in countries on the African continent that are trying to enhance ties with the East, namely Russia and China, and Latin American nations that are standing firm against U.S. unilateralism. All these point to their rejection of Western hegemony.
Okay, now let's take a look at Europe now. Tens of thousands of nurses and ambulance workers in the UK walking out on the largest ever strike by health workers in that country. Health providers have been staging separate industrial actions over the past month in a pay dispute. But the Monday stoppage is unseen in the 75-year history of the National Health Service in terms of scale. Workers from across sectors, including healthcare, railway, and education staff, have been staging mass walkouts since last summer. They demand an increase in their wages, aligned with a double-digit inflation. But the government insists that pay rises are unaffordable and cause more price hikes. The UK and other European countries have seen an economic crunch amid a rampant inflation due to the war in Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Russian officials say the strengthening of Ukraine's missile power by the United States will not change the war equations and will only prolong the crisis. They say the delivery of new missile launchers and long-range missiles by Washington to Kiev has not changed the reality of the war on the ground and will only prolong the conflict that was created in the first place by NATO and the West. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Defense News website has covered this story and tells us more. The Pentagon has announced that the United States will allow Ukraine to fire long-range missiles sent to the country at Kiev's discretion. The Pentagon said on Friday, 3rd of February, it is up to the government in Kiev to decide how to use new rockets being delivered for the U.S.-supplied HIMARS launchers. Pentagon's statement is a confirmation that the latest batch of munitions sent by the U.S. military to Ukraine to fight Russia will include ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets. The Boeing-manufactured GLSDB, or ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets, consist of a rocket motor mated with an airplane bomb, with an estimated range of up to 150 kilometers. Friday's announcement listed additional munitions for the HIMARS and precision-guided rockets, confirming the information leaked to Reuters news agency recently. Brigadier General Patrick Ryder told reporters that this indeed included the ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets. Brigadier General Ryder also pointed out that the U.S. would not stand in the way of Ukrainians using the missiles to strike deep into Russia. He said on Friday, when it comes to Ukrainian plans on operations, clearly that is their decision. They are in the lead for those, he added. So I'm not going to talk about or speculate about potential future operations. But again, all along, we've been working with them to provide them with capabilities that will enable them to be effective on the battlefield. Meanwhile, the Reuters news agency claimed to have seen a Boeing document saying the first deliveries of the new munitions could be as early as spring of 2023. Bloomberg news agency cited unnamed government sources as saying the timeline for munitions delivery could be as long as 9 months, depending on when the U.S. Air Force issues the contract. Kiev has repeatedly requested the West to supply its forces with the MGM-140 Army Tactical Missile System rockets, which have a range of some 300 kilometers. Till now, the Ukrainian forces have used the HIMARS launchers supplied by the West to strike both military and civilian targets. The U.S. and its allies have not directly taken part in the hostilities, but continue to send weaponry and ammunition to Kiev, amounting to over $32 billion, since Russia launched its special operation almost a year ago. Moscow has warned the West against flooding Ukraine with arms and munitions, asserting such a move will not stop Russia from reaching its objectives and would merely prolong the conflict and add to the casualties and destruction. The website of Business Insider has also covered this story and tells us more. Russia has warned if the United States supplies Ukraine with longer-range missiles, Washington will cross a red line and become a party to the conflict, nearly 1 year into Moscow's military operation in the ex-Soviet Republic. In a recent press conference, the Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said, "Russia reserves the right to defend its territory," she warned. If Washington decided to supply longer-range missiles to Kiev, then it will be crossing a red line and will become a direct party to the conflict. The United States has already provided Kiev with advanced rockets capable of hitting targets up to 80 kilometers away, while so far refusing to publicly announce it would send rockets with more than double that range. Since the beginning of the war, the US has been providing Kiev with military aid, including at least 16 HIMARS systems, four of which arrived back in August. HIMARS is a light multiple rocket launcher that can hit targets with precision. It is capable of launching all rockets specified in the multiple launch rocket system family of munitions. Its manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, says the system has a recognized and proven range of up to 300 kilometers. While Kiev is imploring for more Western weapons, Moscow says it sent troops to prevent Ukraine being used as a platform for Western aggression and to defend Russian speakers in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has time and again said the US is prolonging the war in Ukraine as part of what he called Washington's efforts to maintain its global hegemony. Russia's Itatass news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A senior Russian foreign ministry official has warned Western countries that supplying long-range and more advanced weaponry to Ukraine would cross Russia's red lines, and in that case, they have to be ready for a response. Director of the Russian Foreign Ministry's second CIS department, Alexei Polishchuk, said recently, "As for the red lines, we have already designated them. First of all, these are the deliveries of long-range or more powerful weapons to Kiev. Specific measures of response to the actions by the United States and its allies, supply weapons to the Kiev regime will be defined following a thorough analysis of the developing situation." The high-ranking Russian diplomat said Russia has sufficient tools to implement them. Recently, the U.S. State Department announced that the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly stated that it has no intention of taking direct part in the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. It claimed, "As long as the United States or our allies are not attacked, we're not going to get directly engaged in this conflict, either by putting American troops to fight in Ukraine or attacking Russian forces." The United States is worried that the targeting Russia's territory and crossing Moscow's red line would lead to the escalation of the war and draw Washington into a direct conflict with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, another senior Russian official has warned the supply of more advanced weaponry to Ukraine will just add fuel to the fire, culminating in more retaliatory strikes by Russian forces. The deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, who is also the country's former president, told journalist Nadana Friedrichsen in a written interview published on Saturday, 4th of February, that in case Ukraine receives new weaponry, all regions remaining under its rule will also burn. Dmitry Medvedev said more aid to Ukraine would mean more retaliation. Journalist Nadana Friedrichsen asked Medvedev whether the use of longer-range weapons might force Russia to negotiate with Kiev. Medvedev insisted that the use of longer-range weapons by Ukraine and its allies will not force Russia to hold negotiations. Dmitry Medvedev said, "The result will be just the opposite." He emphasized that Russia is ready to use all types of weapons in accordance with its doctrinal documents.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him,
الجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة قسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the first sermon where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains about the certain circumstances in which, the sociological circumstances, the political state, and all of those other issues that are related to the society, how these were at the time of the coming of the prophets. And Imam Ali alayhi salam says that one of the main problems that occurred for humanity, which led to the coming of the prophets, was that they changed the covenant of God that was on top of them, that was supposed to be applied by them. And Imam Ali alayhi salam says with this regards, he says that لَمَّا بَدَّلَ أَكْثَرُ خَلْقِهِ عَهْدَ اللَّهِ إِلَيْهِمْ, when the majority of the creation of God, majority of the human beings, they changed the promise of God that was addressed towards them. And when they changed it, then there were certain results. One of them was that they became ignorant of the rights of Allah.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we said that, you know, this issue of becoming ignorant of the rights of God, when a person starts to become ignorant of that right of God, or when a society ignores that right, it is then that man asks, so now what is the role of God in the society? You see, when this promise of God is changed, when that covenant of God, that mankind has to be honored and men have equal rights, with regards to the law, none is above the law, none can just disregard the Islamic law. When this is considered, then a person starts to feel that God is present in the society. The role of God in his life becomes clear. But when this is absent and this is kind of changed and the synchrony is destroyed, then man sees that the presence or absence of God has no effect in the society. And this itself is that very ignorance that we are talking about with regards to the rights of God. Notice that this is a result of the humans disregarding that covenant. And if you look at this from a materialistic mindset or in a secular civilization, if you witness this in a secular civilization, you will realize that God is not missed, like no one misses God, because the human is misguided from his original state, whereby he wants to materialize the promise of God. But when he's misguided from that state and he's just engrossed in the material world, and man takes a seat on that pedestal where he starts to make laws himself, then he feels independent from God. And even the oppressed people, and even the oppressed, both the oppressors and the oppressed, now in this system, do not see any role that the divine has in the society. And this is one of, this is actually what we call ignoring the rights of God. This ignorance is manifested in issues like, confining religion only to moral discourses. Okay, where now God is not in the society, but God is just to do with something that is within people's hearts or within the doors and walls of the mosques and the walls of the churches. This ignoring the rights of God is actually concomitant to confining God to only certain areas of life. And this is actually what secularism tells us.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we see that in such an idea, when a person, changes that promise of God, which is the promise of God where all of mankind have to be equally under the authority of God, none being above the other and preferred over or favored above the other, in just because of some material reasons, then, and if people now change this course, destroy this system, then you should expect problems. That means that this society still runs in a way that God is completely ignored, and mankind, takes over that area and feels that, he can control everything. And therefore, this is completely in contrast with what God wants us in the Quran. That's why a person narrates that once they were going in a taxi in one of the Western countries, and he tells the taxi driver that, "Will you go to the church today?" He said, "It isn't necessary for me to go. It's not necessary." And this reply actually is, it reverberates across the whole of the Western world at the moment, because in reality, the church, or let's say God, doesn't have a necessary role in the lives of the people. And it's just something that a human being can decide when he wants to be in touch with God. When he doesn't want, he doesn't get in touch with God. So you have such a weak role of God in the society, rather in your lives even, when we talk about a secular society. And this is exactly what we say, that the rights of God have been ignored. Now you notice that the rights of God are ignored. Why? Because of changing that trend and changing that promise that God has established and has decided for men. And which was what? The issue of worshipping God, of submitting to God, of obeying God, of being able to apply those commandments in the society and being equal under the law, where unfortunately people, they changed it so that they can meet their own whims and desires. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
The U.S. shot down a Chinese balloon over the Atlantic Ocean just days after it was spotted crossing the United States and adding to already high tensions between Washington and Beijing. A U.S. Air Force F-22 Raptor jet fighter on Saturday, 4th of February, downed the balloon with a single Sidewinder missile off the coast of South Carolina, within U.S. territorial waters, according to U.S. officials. The jet fighter was flying at 58,000 feet below the balloon, which had been flying as high as 65,000 feet. China's foreign ministry has protested, saying U.S. overreacted and violated international norms by shooting down the balloon. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. China expressed strong dissatisfaction, opposition towards the U.S. use of force to attack China's civilian unmanned airship, Chinese Foreign Ministry said on Sunday, 5th of February, in a statement. The Chinese side has, after verification, repeatedly informed the United States of the civilian nature of the airship and conveyed that its entry into the United States due to force majeure was totally unexpected, the statement said, noting the Chinese side has clearly asked the United States to properly handle the matter in a calm, professional and restrained manner. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said on Friday, when answering a relevant query, that the civilian airship is used for research, mainly meteorological purposes. Affected by the westerlies, and with limited self-steering capability, the airship deviated from its planned course. According to the Chinese Foreign Ministry statement, the spokesperson of the U.S. Department of Defense also noted the balloon does not present a military or physical threat to people on the ground. Under such circumstances, the U.S. use of force is a clear overreaction and a serious violation of the international practice. China will resolutely safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of the company concerned and reserve the right to make further responses if necessary, said the Chinese Foreign Ministry statement. The global edition of China Daily has also covered this story and tells us more. On Sunday, 5th of February, the Chinese Foreign Ministry expressed its strong dissatisfaction and protests against the United States for shooting down its balloon. The U.S. shooting was a blatant provocation. The Pentagon has confirmed that the U.S. military has shot down the suspected Chinese spy balloon after it drifted off the East Coast near the Carolinas, which is a blatant provocation. The US should pay a price for what it did. Earlier, on Friday, 3rd of February, the Chinese Foreign Ministry had confirmed that the entity seen over Montana was a civilian airship from China used for research, mainly for meteorological purposes. It deviated far from its planned path due to the westerlies and its limited self-steering capability. A Chinese civilian balloon deviated from its path and straying into the skies over the United States because of force majeure does not constitute infringement of sovereignty, the statement said. Instead, the United States has many a time encroached on China's sea and airspace on purpose in the name of freedom of navigation and overflight. It's the US provocations that should not be indulged by any means. On Saturday, the US announced it was postponing Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's visit to Beijing on 5th of February. Apparently, US politicians wanted to step-by-step make the incident escalate into a bigger crisis. However, America's tricks to defame China will only end up in failure. China had not confirmed a final schedule for Anthony Blinken's visit, though the Chinese Foreign Ministry had earlier responded to the US announcement of a visit by welcoming it for the improvement of bilateral ties. What's more, in the run-up to the expected visit, Washington had not done anything to create the right ground for talks. Instead, it further intensified its containment of China from its military hawks seeing a war with China in 2025 to escalating technology decoupling by pressing Japan and the Netherlands to restrict export of chip manufacturing tools to China. The US State Department even said that Anthony Blinken will, during his visit, instruct China on what to do and what not to do. The US should realize that such a bossy demeanor will not help achieve any fruitful results. Instead, it will destroy bilateral ties. Therefore, a visit, if its aim is to dictate to China, is not welcome in the first place. Now the US is stepping up its bullying tactics, which shouldn't be tolerated at all. China should be prepared to take countermeasures. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. The US military on Saturday, 4th of February, shut down a suspected Chinese spy balloon off the Carolina coast after it was traversed sensitive military sites across North America. China has insisted the flyover was an accident involving a civilian aircraft and threatened repercussions. President Joe Biden issued the order but had wanted the balloon downed even earlier, on Wednesday. He was advised that the best time for the operation would be when it was over water, US officials confirmed. Military officials determined that bringing it down over land from an altitude of 60,000 feet would pose an undue risk to people on the ground. China responded that it reserved the right to take further action and criticized the United States for an obvious overreaction and a serious violation of international practice. In its statement on Sunday, 5th of February, China's foreign ministry said China will resolutely uphold the relevant company's legitimate rights and interests and at the same time reserve the right to take further action in response. The presence of the balloon in the skies above the United States this week dealt a severe blow to already strained US-Chinese relations that have been in a downward spiral for years. It prompted the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken to abruptly cancel a high-stakes trip to Beijing aimed at easing tensions. "They successfully took it down, and I want to compliment our aviators who did it," President Biden said after getting off Air Force One en route to Camp David. The giant white orb was spotted on Saturday morning over the Carolinas as it approached the Atlantic coast. A jet fighter fired a missile at the balloon, puncturing it while it was about 6 nautical miles off the coast near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, according to senior Pentagon officials. The spectacle had Americans looking to the skies all week, wondering whether the mysterious balloon had floated over them. The debris landed in 47 feet of water, shallower than officials had expected, and it spread out over roughly 7 miles, and the recovery operation included several ships. U.S. officials estimated the recovery efforts would be completed in a short time, a matter of days and not weeks. U.S. defense and military officials said on Saturday that the balloon entered the U.S. air defense zone north of the Aleutian Islands in Alaska on 28th of January and moved largely over land across Alaska and then into Canadian airspace in the Northwest Territories on Monday. It crossed back into U.S. territory over northern Idaho on Tuesday, the day the White House said President Biden was first briefed on it.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners because today marks the anniversary of the demise of the great sister of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, the Lady Zainab. Here at Hadith of the Day and IRIB English Radio, we would like to convey our condolences to our listeners on this most grave and sad day. It's been narrated from Imam Sajjad, alayhi salam, the fourth Imam, that he said the following, addressing his aunt, the Lady Zainab. He said,
"Ante bihamdillah alimatun ghayra muallama wa fahimatun ghayra mufahama."
This is a famous hadith, and the virtues which have been transmitted in the hadith regarding the Lady Zainab are, of course, not limited to this. Many beautiful hadiths have been transmitted regarding her great stature, and her stature is not limited to the fact that she was the sister of Imam Hussein, or the sister of Imam Hussein, or the daughter of Imam Ali alayhi salam, or the aunt of an imam, and so on and so forth. Meaning her virtues cannot be limited in scope to her being a relative of a great person. No, she was in herself a very great person, and that greatness doesn't also simply stem and emanate from the fact it doesn't revolve around the events of Karbala and also the events and the occurrences which transpired after that. Rather, we can't, limit her personality to these virtues that we see manifested in these events that surround.